Today's episode of Lighting Up the Marquee is sponsored by Dark Sales Productions. In today's world, video is the best way to share your story. Whether you're looking to market your business or brand on social media, or even share amazing memories like your wedding and other events, Dark Sales Productions is committed to creating the best content and capturing your most precious memories for you. Based in the Chicagoland area, Dark Sales Productions has worked with clients in the past to help market both local businesses and larger brands, capture newlyweds' perfect day, produce short films, and even work with individuals looking to have professional photos and headshots taken. No matter the business occasion or individual, Dark Sales Productions is ready to work with you. All you have to do is visit the website darksalesproductions.com to learn more about them, and you can also contact them to get started on your next project. That's DarkSalesProductions.com. And if you go over there and mention that you listened to this ad on Lighting Up the Marquee, they'll hook you up with some special offers. Once again, that's darksalesproductions.com. All you got to do is mention that you listened to this ad on Lighting Up the Marquee, and some special offers will be there waiting for you. Now, let's get started with today's episode. You should have gotten a little red light, I think, in your corner.
Yep, it says recording.
Sweet. So we are live.
Wow. All right.
We're live. This is episode 66, I think, of Lighting Up the Marquee. We are back once again with Kelly.
Hi, guys.
Joined over Zoom since I upgraded from Skype because that shit was garbage.
Yeah, come on, Tim. Early 2000s was the Skype era. We are in the Zoom era now.
You know, I was furloughed. I didn't have money to pay for Zoom. So I was like, I'll hold out on Skype as long as I can.
Oh, yeah. I always forget you have to buy the like additional time package with Zoom.
Yeah, if you don't want to be restricted. So that's what I did. But it was bullshit because I was working not with Zoom, but with Skype because I was working with Arsenio on an episode. And we got so out of sync, even though we were in sync, the connection was so bad that it took me 5 hours to edit the episode and like get rid of gaps, close gaps, move our audio so it doesn't sound like delayed or jagged. But what happened was it was weird too. We had a connection error and he cut out for a solid maybe 30 seconds. But his audio file that he sent me didn't have that gap. It was only on my end.
That's weird.
So I don't know what happened. Like, I even asked him, I was like, did you pause your audio? And he said, no. And like, it just kept going. So I don't know.
Well,
what.
That sounds like one big headache. I'm sorry you had to go through that.
I think I got Zoom right after I finished that episode. I was like, not doing that again.
Yeah, not worth it.
But we're back. It is the Friday the 13th episode. I was supposed to do an episode actually with another podcast today, coming on the show, but we pushed it back. Our schedules were pretty hectic. So I got you instead.
Well, I'm always happy to be here, Tim.
So we'll talk about, I know we were talking like yesterday, but we can talk about like the movie theaters, what's happening with them, how movies are dying. But also they're thriving because last time I had the Onyx girls on and they inspired me with their films to finish a script that I sent you to look at.
Guys, so it's so good.
We can talk a little bit about it without like spoiling it. It's a script I've been working on for a while. I think since the beginning of the pandemic.
Yeah, you've been talking about this script for a long time. And then I know you really started like putting actual words into it. Like I would say like, yeah, the beginning of the pandemic is when things actually started to speed along.
Well, because it was one of those ideas where it's part of an idea I want to do of like an anthology, like film, very similar to a Japanese film called Kwaidan, which is a 60s ghost story anthology film, but it's 3 hours long. But each of the stories, I believe, was like 40 minutes. But I was trying to do something like that along the lines of like American urban legends, like sort of things, like kind of like not like folklores, but like tales you would hear or like things to explore in parts of like the country you wouldn't expect. So I was trying to keep with a theme, but this is like the first one I finished. I have a couple more ideas I was working on, but
Like it because I like a good, like not a jump scare or like a gore scare, but I like a bone chilling, like kind of like creepy, eerie kind of scare. And I felt like your script was just so perfect because it was eerie and interesting, but it like wasn't too much, you know?
There, I don't even think is any gore in it.
No, that's what I'm saying. It's like a...
Or any on-screen violence.
Right. It reminds me of like a classic, well, it's not a ghost story, but it reminds me of like the same kind of feeling where it's just like an eeriness
mm-hmm.
that kind of leaves you thinking and like uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was like a, it's a culty sort of script. I can say that, but the idea I think came from like, I was brought up Catholic and I find the concept of, like kind of like it's also in politics too, because it's happening a lot with everything like fear mongering, where you play up fear and that like builds up people. But it's also the idea of mass hysteria. And I know like I was reading a lot about like in the old days, like in like I believe it was Catholic or Christian churches, like those old like those tiny towns out in the woods, like would have a priest basically putting the fear of God into people. And it's sort of like that, but doesn't get like, I try not to get too preachy about it in the script, but it's like a theme of mass hysteria.
Oh yeah. I could definitely see that.
Cause like, again, growing up Catholic, you see like, you're supposed to be in the middle line, like or middle ground is where you should be, but you have the people that don't care or the people who it's based off of, who are like hardcore, like Bible is word, like, and it's this, it's, I think I was talking about it was like you can't have religion and politics meet because it's the two extremes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all those people that it's based off of.
Yeah. I mean, I saw that definitely. And it's interesting because during this pandemic, I've been driving all across the United States. And I feel like most of the United States is made up of those like really creepy, abandoned looking towns. Oh. Where you just see like a chapel and then like fields of nothing and then like maybe a barn that's like kind of, you know, run down and then like one person walking. And I'm like, oh my God.
I forgot where, what state line it was, but we were driving because when Claudia and I moved back to Indiana, we were driving and it was getting close to dark. So we had to get to the hotel. I feel like it was Missouri, but on the border of the state, is an abandoned motel, and it's like this, it's a town you can go to and the town only consists of this motel and that's it, and it's abandoned and you can see it from the highway when you're driving past it. I wanted to stop at it like and see it, but it was like getting dark.
I mean, what would a town do just with a motel?
I think it was more to the town, like it wasn't a big town, but the motel is like I think the only thing still standing.
Oh wow.
But it's like you looked over to the side and it was still standing. It was like all like not perfect condition, but you could tell it was a motel.
Right.
But it was weird seeing things like that, or even like a lot of just the random, like you said, like randomness. I remember when driving out to LA, it was weird seeing like hitchhikers in the middle of the desert, hundreds of miles from a stop.
Oh wow. I don't think I've ever seen a hitchhiker.
I saw a couple on the way out to LA, but it was weird because you'd drive in the desert and it would be like next gas station, like 200 miles away, or like not like that's the next stop. And 50 miles in, you see somebody walking.
That's crazy.
I'm just like, nope.
Have you driving. Ever hitchhiked?
No, I'm not doing that.
My sister has. When she was in a foreign country, she decided to hitchhike, and that like mind blowed me, because I'm like, I feel like you have to have such trust in humanity to be able to hitchhike. Like I'm so paranoid and I feel like I do not trust strangers, which might be just because I'm a woman, or maybe I'm a little jaded, but like I feel like I am too paranoid to hitchhike because I would just assume the worst in people.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
I mean, I've seen Texas Chainsaw. I know what happens.
Oh, no.
Well, because they picked up the hitchhiker and he was one of the family members. But he didn't like take him to the house. He was like crazy. So I think they let him out.
I hate those kind of movies.
I've seen my fair share of horror movies to know not to do that.
I noticed. I think it was Hulu that, or was
that? Hulu has Huluween.
Yeah, Huluween. I noticed. I think that one was on there. And My Bloody Valentine, which I actually saw that one back.
The original one or the remake?
I think it came out in like 2014?
I think it's 2009, because I remember.
Was it? Oh my gosh, it was 2009. Oh my.
Because I've seen the original from 81.
Wow.
The original.
I didn't even know there was an original.
There's an original. I think I remember reading. It has like a weird story behind why they made it. It goes along with all those slasher films in the 80s that were just copying Halloween and trying to capitalize
right
off of Halloween. Because that's exactly what Friday the 13th did. The only reason Friday the 13th exists is because of Halloween.
Really?
Yeah. They were just capitalizing off the slasher craze.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought that Friday 13th was like a Renaissance era superstition type ordeal.
No. Friday the 13th is a slasher film with Jason.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the actual date though. And that's
No, that was around before the movie. They just used that name to because it's the superstition.
Right.
But even though the film hasn't, I think the film has nothing to do with that date unless he died on that day, but those films
maybe it was just a reference to being unlucky.
Those films have such a, they're so inconsistent, that whole series. So what did I'm trying to look up what I read about what I read about the film, because it was weird, because I was looking up the remake too, and it's such a weird movie to remake, because it wasn't that successful when it came out. It had a cult following, but that's about it. And it's a Canadian slasher film.
Interesting.
Because I remember, I think it was that and Prom Night and all these films coming from, and Terror Train, all these films that were coming from Canada that were capitalizing off of the horror slasher craze.
So, Tim, as you know, I have no horror film knowledge. I am really... Growing up, I was so impressionable. I just stayed away from all horror films. I saw The Blob in sixth grade, and I was traumatized for years.
Oh, which so, one? Which Blob? The black
and white one.
Oh, the original one?
Yeah.
I saw the remake. That one is more gross.
Oh, great. See, I was traumatized from the old-fashioned black and white one. So, in honor of Friday the 13th, because my sister loves horror films, maybe I will watch one of your recommendation this Friday the 13th. So you could pick one.
I gotta pick one?
Just one. And I do not, I can, my limit is I cannot do something that's hack them up, tear off their limbs. So nothing that.
Well, I wasn't gonna suggest any of those because I don't really not really too big on those. I talked about how I've seen all the Saw films and they don't do anything for me. They're cool. It's just gross out fest. And the same thing with the slasher films, the Friday the 13th series, the whole point of those is just for Jason to kill people. It's literally I was watching all of them and I watched 1 through 8 and I'd already seen one, but I hadn't seen the other ones. And then the Scream Factory box that came out, cause I needed to finish 9, 10. What is it? Freddy versus Jason. And then the remake. So it was the last four, and all of the, I think it's 2 through 4 is they're so interchangeable, with who's in it. It's it's all the same people, but he just keep killing them. And the whole point of the film is just Jason to kill people. That's the whole point of those characters. There's no character arcs. There's no backstory to anybody. They're all just horny and they all want to have sex. And then Jason kills them.
See, that makes me feel people watch those movies not for story and character development. It makes me feel people just watch those movies to get an adrenaline rush.
Oh no, that's exactly what they are. That's again, they were capitalizing off of Halloween, but Halloween was actually a good story and very minimalistic, that you didn't really know who Michael Myers was. And then they just kind of again with him, they kind of just capitalized off of him.
Right.
But No, Friday the 13th is just a cash grab. I gotta think of a horror film now.
Yeah, one.
What have you seen? Like, because I want to know what you've seen and what, like, the basis I can go, like.
Okay, so literally, in my entire lifetime, I've barely seen anything. I saw The Ring, the first one.
Okay.
I saw My Bloody Valentine back when I was, like, in high school.
Well, I'm not gonna suggest any slasher films, because this, again, like, they're very, like, there's good ones, and then there's, like, the Friday the 13th where I enjoy them, but they're mindless. Like, you just throw them on to have fun.
You showed me Houssou.
Houssou's good. That was a classic.
And I told you The Blob, which I was traumatized from. honestly, I think when it comes to horror, oh wait, I think I saw this one film that was about, like, teenagers going to a cabin and they
cabin
all
in
died.
The woods.
Yeah,
Evil
that
Dead.
One. No, Cabin in the Woods,
is
that
it,
one.
Is Chris Hemsworth in it?
Oh, no. No.
I don't know what.
They all went on, like, a vacation together, and then I think there's, like, a portal at the end or something.
I think that's Evil Dead 1 or 2.
Okay.
Is there a chainsaw hand in it? Or is there a book of the dead?
I don't remember.
I feel like it was the Evil Dead. If there was a portal, because I don't know, because Cabin in the Woods is exactly the same, but, like, Cabin in the Woods is, it's like a satire of horror films. It's all the horror tropes put into one movie. I feel like it was Evil Dead.
Here, let me see the cast. Cabin in the Woods.
Speaking of, I'm looking at the My Bloody Valentine poster from the original one. And I'm trying to come up with this slasher film that I want to do that's sort of, like, COVID related. And I wanted to have, like, not the look of the guy from My Bloody Valentine with the minor, like, mask on, but I wanted, like, a gas mask, like a faceless person for the film.
Oh my goodness, that is so creepy.
These are the ideas I come up with.
Okay, I think it was Cabin in the Woods, now that I'm looking at the stills from the movie.
Because Chris Hemsworth is in that movie.
This was a long time ago, and I was only half paying attention because I don't like horror films, but I'm more open-minded in my older age.
Cabin in the Woods is like a comedy more so than a horror film.
I remember it was like, it had like funny moments.
It starts out as like a horror film, like doing a lot of the tropes, but then they flip the switch and it's like people controlling the scenarios. So mm-hmm. It becomes like a comedy because it's like they have all the horror gimmicks, all the like the horror genres. They're like, all right, what are we going to throw at them next? Like zombies, let's go. Cabin in the Woods is great.
And then I've seen a bunch of the Final Destination movies, but
oh, good.
And that's it. That's literally my extent.
For horror, I would probably say, have you seen like Hereditary or Midsommar?
No.
All right. Out of those two, I'd say Hereditary. Watch.
I heard that's like really scary.
Yeah, there you go. Watch that.
Oh, Tim, you're gonna do this to me.
You said a horror film, so I'm suggesting Hereditary. I was going to say like Black Christmas, like the original 74 one, which is a slasher film, but you never see the killer, which is actually, it's a good film, but I'm going to go with Hereditary.
Fine. I'll watch Hereditary.
If you can watch Hereditary, you could probably watch like most horror films, honestly. Hereditary is very scary.
Oh, Tim, you're going to do this to me? The girl who was traumatized by the black and white blob.
You're going to watch Hereditary.
Gosh, because it's funny because like my sister, she never gets scared, and there's only two movies she thought was scary, and I think it was Hereditary, and then one that was a long time ago that was like back in like 2009 or 2010. I forgot what it was. It
wasn't the Paranormal Activities, was it?
Oh gosh, no.
I saw those movies. I saw those movies at Best Buy. Like they have all of them available for like $20.
Those movies, I didn't even, like, I've never seen them, but when I saw the trailers, I thought they looked so hokey.
Yeah. I remember, I got a couple stories about it. So I remember seeing the first one just because I wanted to see the guy get thrown into the camera. And that was the very end of the movie. So I sat through the whole film waiting for that part because it's in the trailer. Like, that's the last part of the movie, and that's in the trailer. So I was like waiting for that. And I was like, all right, the first one was all right. Like, it was effective for what it was. And I think the marketing was really good for it. And then I think it was The Marked Ones, I think. That Paranormal Activity, the one with, like, I think that's in Mexico. I think. I don't remember what it was called. But I remember I was working at Studio Movie Grill, which we will talk about later. Studio Movie Grill was playing it, and I was working in Indiana at that one, and we had a snowstorm, but we still opened because people got to see their movies during a snowstorm. And no one came in for the first 4 hours we were open. So everybody took their breaks at the exact same time and went to go see that movie. And by the time we got out of our breaks, like, we just sat there and, like, we clocked out our breaks and then clocked back in and just went back to the movie and watched it. And, like, no one still came in, and we finished the whole movie.
Wow.
That was fun working
That's
there for
cool.
some days.
Well, you're such like a movie buff. I mean, look, you have a whole podcast on films. I feel like that's like the perfect job for you.
That was one of the jobs, though, that I hated. It was like my first job, but they did so much shady shit that I don't know if I want to go into it on a podcast talking about it, but they did a lot of shady shit. They got cracked down on by, what is it, the labor board? The board of, like, what's the people that come in and be like, you're breaking labor laws? Like, they got cracked down on by them. I think they got caught a couple times serving underage kids, like, alcohol because they weren't properly checking IDs. Yeah, they didn't hire good people to work at Studio Movie
So
Grill.
it sounds like the job itself wasn't bad, but the people that were there weren't the best at their jobs.
Well, here's also the thing. I'll say this. When they scheduled you for a shift, they gave you a start time. You didn't get an end time. So I would get my schedule every week, and I was also, bear in mind, I was in high school at this time. I wasn't 18, so I was 17. So that's why they got cracked down on by the labor board, because I was, as a 17-year-old kid, they had me working till like midnight on weekdays and then having to go to school the next day.
What?
And I would come in like right after school and go to work.
Like, how many hours would your shift be?
Like 8 hours. Here's also a fun fact. I went in for a Saturday morning shift, 10 a.m. again, or 9 a.m. because I was opening. Again, no end time, just a start time. So I could be either working 6 hours, 8 hours. Yeah, I left that day at 1 a.m. and I went in at 9 a.m. that morning. They gave me an illegal double shift. I did not get overtime for it.
You didn't get overtime and you were like 17.
Yeah.
Wow.
And
I was working at like Party City with 4 hour shifts when
the
I was
pay
like.
the pay rate at that job was $6.50 an hour. So it was below minimum wage. Or it was, yeah, it was below Indiana's minimum wage.
You guys don't even get like tipped really
Oh,
at a movie
we
theater.
got tips. They weren't good tips though, because it was I was a runner, so we just ran the food and like the drinks and everything.
Oh, so
So
you guys actually like served food?
yeah, it's Studio Movie Grill. They told us at orientation, we are a restaurant that shows movies. We are not a movie theater that serves food. I was like,
Oh, I like I'm not familiar with the chain, so I just assumed it was like another Paragon or like an AMC.
well, AMC kind of tried doing that with like serving food. Because of Studio Movie Grill. At least that's how it was in Indy. And then another place in Indy opened called Flick's Brew House, which I think is a national chain, but not as big. But they kind of got the concept better of how to do a movie theater restaurant.
Oh.
Because at Studio Movie Grill, you had to like duck down in like these really tiny seats. Where at Flick's, they have rows for the servers to walk in, so they don't have to like crouch or like. Like, I tripped over so many people because like the aisles were so thin. It
Right. And it's
was
like dark, so you're like, ooh.
exactly. And some of those theaters were pitch black. Like, they didn't even have like the aisle lighting.
Oh, those, let's be real, those aisle lightings, it's not even good. I still trip down the stairs when I have to pee in the middle of a
Some
movie.
theaters help, but some, like, one of the theaters had Gravity playing, and it was in a pitch black theater because most of that's in space. So there's no light. So that one was rough, but yeah, Studio Movie Girl. I don't even know where I was going with that story. I just started talking about about them.
Yeah, but honestly, like I've never heard of Studio Movie Girl. Are they like Midwest or are they national?
They started in Texas. There was a few in California. There was like one or two, I think, but they're like again, like the concept of it's cool and everything, but oh no, I remember what I was saying because you were saying it was a perfect job. No, it was like I said, I didn't like that job, but I would want to go see movies because I could see them for free. So it's like I want to go see movies, but I don't want to go to my job. So it's like I think I remember one week I was there every day, like on my off days too, because I was going to see movies.
Well, it sounded like they well, I mean, you weren't getting paid right. You're making a little tip. You weren't getting in time shifts. They were overworking you. Did they even give you proper breaks?
I'm trying to remember how they did the break. The breaks, here's also the thing, the breaks were so like iffy because they did not know how to manage. Like they had like seven different managers for each department. And then, oh, I remember how they did it. They let us go like school. They would come up to us as soon as the labor board cracked down on them. They would come up to us and be like, all right, everybody who's 17, like, or like 18 and like under, like you can go home now. Like you've worked your shift. And like 10 people would leave. It wouldn't be just like scheduled out.
So it was like very unorganized.
So here's what would happen. We would be like, we would have a good staff like in the morning that a bunch of people would come in to the point where we were overstaffed and we would have too many people, so there wasn't anything to do. And then they would let a bunch of people go home and we got busy as soon as they let everybody leave. Because it was like the afternoon evenings. So then for the rest of the night we were understaffed.
Wow.
I can't believe I put up with that job for like a year.
I mean, when you're under, I would say when you're under 21, I feel like you put up with a lot, right? Like,
Well,
especially when you're like, it's one of your first jobs, you know, you feel independent.
that was my first job. I think I had just
Yeah,
turned like
see?
16 or 17 and I got
Yeah.
the job.
So you're like, finally, I'm an adult, I get a job. And so you don't know better, right? And I feel like you would put up with more than you do when you become like a older adult, you
I think I
know?
put in my 2 weeks at that job like three times. Two or three. I know I, for a fact, I put it in more than once. And I think the first time they gave me like a little pay raise to stay.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It was, I did not like that job.
Well, you got a new part-time hustle now.
Potentially full time, potentially, hopefully. I applied for a promotion or like kind of a promotion. There's like an opening for a full-time job that I applied there for.
Well, Tim, I know this is a little off topic, but I know you're in Indiana right now. So if you get this full-time position, are you going to stay in Indiana for a bit? Or are you going to ask for a transfer? Do you know? Like, or are you just kind of going with the flow?
Whatever happens, I don't see California opening anytime soon.
Yeah, that's true. I honestly don't see any improvement until like summer of 2021.
I'm seeing 2022, honestly. Here's
Yeah.
the thing, Universal's not going to open because Disneyland, people are fighting to get Disneyland open, which is stupid, but Disneyland just announced that they furloughed not only like salaried and hourly employees, but they're furloughing executives at Disneyland.
Yeah, I mean, one of my good friends from Virginia that I've been like childhood friends with like for almost since like what, middle school. I was so excited because like 2 months before the pandemic, he moved to LA like 10 minutes from me because he got a big corporate job at Disney in California in Burbank. And I was like, oh my gosh, like my childhood friend's here. I'm so excited. And he got furloughed. He got laid off.
Yeah, I have to ask Arsenio what he's doing. 'Cause I remember when it all started, he was getting worried he was gonna get furloughed from his job that he had just gotten. He'd only been there like a few weeks.
I feel so bad because I know so many people that got furloughed, and especially Disney. Disney's a huge company and they let go of a lot of employees and
And
not
they're
just
still.
like part-time or theme park, like corporate, like
Yep.
all sides.
It's like it's again, if things don't improve out there. It's like I might be here for a while, which I mean, I don't mind. I'm making more money here than I was in LA. Like the hourly rate I'm working here is more than the jobs I had in LA, and the tax is cheaper here, so they don't take as much money out.
Well, if you like the company you're working for now, would you rather transfer with them to LA or would you rather get your old job back?
Who says I can't do both?
Porqué no los dos?
Because I would like getting back at Universal, because I was even talking to Claudia about it the other day. I was like, I miss like Universal. I miss like walking in and hearing like the music.
Yeah.
There's a podcast I listen to. It's Movie Chatter. They at the end have been putting music, and like half the music they put in is all the music that plays throughout the park. And I'm listening to it at my job, and I'm just like, this isn't Universal.
Oh, yeah, and that's, I mean, and your Universal special too, because that's where you met your girlfriend, right? So that also has like sentimental value to you as well.
Yeah, it's like I got a bunch of stories from there. I met a lot of cool people like Arsenio. Like Universal, like as much shit as I talk about, like it wasn't even like the job. It was like the shit, like the people that just went there. Like,
Right.
but that's any job. But I don't know, because I'm trying to get things going here. I'm trying to save money up here and try to get like some films made out here. Since I'm closer to like Nick and everything, I'm trying to get like I want to get some films made out here. Like the script
Yeah.
the script I sent you, I want to try to like find a time to film it. Like I know
Yeah.
Haley's supposed to be in it too, but she's out in LA, so I don't know how we would get her.
Well, I'm going back to LA with Patrick the first week of January, but I'm totally down to film it in Indiana. And like I said, I'd be willing to like drive or figure out a way for me to get there if you feel more comfortable filming in the Midwest.
Well, because I'm trying to like get like at least like a small crew, like everyone get tested before, obviously, and try to get it figured out. But because I want to get a couple more scripts written, like easier scripts versus the one I sent you, because the one I sent you is 20 something pages, and it's quite a challenge to film a lot of it, especially the end. I don't know how that's gonna happen. Even when I was writing it, I was like, I don't know how I'm gonna pull that off. I like the ending, like visually, but I gotta figure out if it'll work.
Yeah, I think you should try to get a producer and a DP and then start like just creatively brainstorming like how to get things
I
looking.
wanted to storyboard it probably in the next couple of days, or
Oh,
like
yeah.
get some rough storyboards. But yeah, I was you said you liked the ending. That's why I was like, all right, cool, it works. Because even when
I loved it.
I was writing it, I was like, it kind of works in my mind, but I'm trying to like in my mind it worked, but I'm trying to figure out how to I might change it. I don't know. Because
Okay.
where it ends I like, but I was like maybe practically I might have to switch locations to something else.
I like the end too because it's a solid ending, but it also like leaves you for, I guess, interpretation and like a more like another story. Like if you want to do another short film continuing off of it, I feel like you have a lot to go from there with it or.
I probably wouldn't. I have my answers to the script, and like a lot of like there's a lot of ambiguity to it, but I have like I know what I am trying to pull off. I'm not being like one of those artsy students that's like my film's for interpretation.
You're like, no, I want you to see it this way.
Somebody in my class at one point I remember made like we had a project to do an experimental film. And they were like, we were asking them what their meaning was, because like even if you have like up to interpretation, you as the filmmaker need your like interpretation.
Right.
Even if it could have many more, like I want you to have like your answer. And this filmmaker was like, I actually like wanted to leave it up to the audience. Like I wanted them to tell me what the meaning of the film was. And I was like, that is a bullshit answer.
I feel like that's like if you're
It's a
like,
cop out.
it's like I got really drunk with my friends this weekend. I needed to whip something out. So I'm just gonna say it's experimental and let the class critique it and then go
That's
off
why I hate experimental films, or at least I
it.
hate experimental films from pretentious film students.
Okay, I experimental films are my favorite, but only if there is like a conceptual meaning behind it, like the artist has an artist statement or like a theme or an intent behind it. Like
Yeah.
those are my favorite pieces, not the ones where people are like, there's here's this experimental film of all these like really random shots or things, and like I don't know what the concept was. I'm letting people decide.
That's what it was. Like,
Yeah.
I vividly remember it was like somebody who discovered the reverse effect on like editing or like on their phone and was like recording stuff and then would reverse it. And they did that so much in it. And I was like, this is bullshit. I just sit through it. I just sit through so many of those like kinds of projects.
Yeah. I don't know.
I always hated how Columbia, like every class I took or like most of the classes I took, they were like, do an experimental piece like as one of your projects. I was like, no, because then we got to sit through all of them.
Yeah, I don't know. At Columbia, I didn't have as much of an issue, but my previous school, which was the School of the Art Institute of Chicago, SCIC, they were like so experimental and like kind of, you know, the typical like artsy fartsy kind of thematic pieces. And I remember I made a conceptual piece and literally like everything had like, oh, I'm trying to show like preservation, ephemerality in this art. And then they're like, why did you decide to make your installation red? And I was like, I just thought red looked good. Like it contrasted well with my piece. And they're like, that's not a reason. You fail. There should be like a concept behind why you made the stand red that's holding your piece. And I'm like,
not everything needs an answer. Like, not everything needs to be like, this is here for this reason.
I know. And it's like so polarizing. I feel like either in art school, it was like, oh, like I just did this out of my soul. Like, you guys can interpret it. Or if you had like a conceptual piece, like every single thing on the piece had to have this like deep meaning. And if you like day of, like the piece of paper was red, they're like, well, why are you serving it on a red paper? I'm like, I don't know. That's the only paper I had in my closet. Like,
that's where like at Columbia, I wish they would have allowed people like more of the freedom to do what they want versus like do this genre or do like in the directing 1 and 2 classes, both of the first films we had to shoot were not even our script. It was like, take a script from an existing movie or a scene, and you can't change any of the dialogue, but you can change the context. You can change the characters' names. Like if you had a boy and a girl like in the script, or if it's like a man and a woman in the script, but you had like two guys or two girls, like obviously you can change it to fit the context. But I didn't like those exercises because like, I think I have those films and I can show people them, but I'm not like, they're good. But personally for me, I'm not too invested in them because it's like, it's not my writing. So it's like I was hired. It was like basically me being hired to direct someone else's script.
Right. No, I get that. And like, I think that was my biggest problem with art school that I wish I could tell, like, I don't know, 17 year olds applying to art school. Like, I feel like I was really jaded after I graduated at 21, like on visual arts and with performing, because in art school, it's just like making you like forcing you to make all this art based on what they're telling you to make. And you have to get it done within like a week. And then you move on to a next section and you have to do a new piece based on what they're telling you. And like, they want your interpretation on it. But I feel like in your bachelor's degree in art school, they don't give you a lot of room to experiment or like do what you want to do. It's a lot of like, we're in session one on the theme of, you know, surrealism. You got to watch this film or like look at this piece from these artists and make a piece based off of them. And you have 2 weeks to do it. And it's like, how can I get inspired by something that's not what I like to do as an artist? And I've heard from other like grad school artists, that's kind of what grad school's for. Like you kind of do your thing, but I'm like, I'm not going to grad school.
Why pay extra money to do your thing when you can just go do it?
Yeah. And that's, and I know like for me, like I don't want to be a teacher. Like I don't want to be a museum curator, like, or an art historian, or, you know, like what I want to do is I want to make art, like, you know? And so it's just kind of like, why did I just take out student loans?
Well, that's what I also wanted to ask you. Cause I know at Columbia with like the acting and the theater department, that's something I wish Columbia would kind of like branch off into two different sections, where you have like theater actors who want to primarily be theater versus actors who are in the theater department, but they're like, oh, I want to be like film or TV, because it's two completely different acting styles.
Oh, completely. And that's why for me, college was a waste of money when it comes to my acting career, because I wasn't, they didn't have an acting program. I think when I graduated, they added like two acting for film classes, but I wasn't a theater actor, which was the acting program at Columbia. So I felt very isolated because I felt like all the theater kids who are in the plays together all were friends. And like what I was learning in the classes, I couldn't apply a lot of it. Mm-hmm. Like I could apply the like researching aspect, like what you should be thinking when you research a script and like character analysis. But when it came to performing, I actually thought it was detrimental because when I, for myself, went into the city, got an agent, started acting in film, I would watch my stuff back in the very beginning and I felt like I was acting in a soap opera. Like it was so over the top that I realized it's so different.
That's what they told us as directors is like when like they were like, you're going to work with theater actors, so you need to make sure like they're up here. You need to bring them down here because they don't need to be up here because the camera is like, we're right here. You don't need to be yelling or it's like, that's the thing is like, I was always impressed with the actors who could translate to film and TV because there's so much more subtle detail that you need to capture versus like, if you're watching a play, you're not going to catch all those subtle details. Right. Or even in a play, they'll just explain it because it's all dialogue.
It's crazy. Like I actually found, I didn't finish it, but I was working on a dance minor and I actually thought my dance classes contributed more to my film acting because it was all about body awareness. And I learned when I first started acting, when I was like 18, when I would watch myself in film, like I wouldn't be paying attention to like my facial expressions as much. Like I would move my eyebrows too much or like my posture wasn't as good. And I like noticed that I wasn't translating well on camera because I didn't have a good body awareness because the camera picks up everything. Unlike when you're on stage, it's about being grandiose and like, so the people in the back of the theater can see you, you know?
That's what I noticed when I was acting in Arsenio's short that he did at the beginning of the year is like, I'm not an actor. And I was even asking Arsenio, I was like, are you sure? are you sure? But like I remember in my acting for directing, one of the notes someone gave me was I was doing like a scene where I'm supposed to be angry, so I kept pointing with one hand, but I wasn't realizing I was just doing like one hand. And they were like, you're performing, like you're delivering, everything's good, but like you kept doing this, or like you kept doing the same hand, which was distracting. And then they said like sometimes I would be like going back and forth on my feet because that's normally how I just stand. I usually go back and forth. So in Arsenio's film, I was like trying to stay grounded, but I was noticing like some face twitches I was doing like in a couple times that I didn't notice when I was acting, which is very, it's so weird like going back and seeing it.
Totally. And that's what I'm talking about. Like, I think body awareness was the biggest thing for me because I'm like, oh, when I didn't notice when I get angry, I like raise my left eyebrow, right? And that's a Kelly thing. That's not a character choice. So it was like, okay. So on stage, I never realized that because no one can see that.
And but no one's supposed to see that. Like in film, a lot of the acting is not from what's being said, but what's being shown.
Right. Kristen Stewart, who blinks all the time.
Don't talk about Bella like that. Don't do her dirty.
Tim, oh, I forgot to tell you. Last week, I saw The Lighthouse, finally.
Oh, yeah? What'd you think about my boy, Robert Pattinson?
Okay, loved it. Now, because we were on the topic of, you know, Kristen Stewart, Bella, Twilight, you know. I was just thinking about Robert Pattinson and how I've never seen him, like, in anything that's, like, quality acting, but you kept telling me, like...
Watch Good Time, The Lighthouse, Damsel, High Life, there's like a bunch of other shit I've seen him in that he's great. Oh, The Rover. He's great in The Rover.
Well, I saw The Lighthouse and Patrick in his basement has like a huge movie theater projector. So we watched it on like a big screen and I really liked it. It was one of those films I don't think I would watch again or buy necessarily, but I really appreciated it. And I thought the acting was incredible.
It's great. I've seen it twice. I want to watch it again. I think Good Time's still my favorite Pattinson performance.
I haven't seen that one.
It's on Amazon, I think. Well, did you see Uncut Gems?
Yes.
Do you like Uncut Gems?
I had mixed feelings.
Or did you find it annoying?
No, I liked it, but I didn't love it. Like Patrick and I walked out of that movie theater and Patrick was like, this movie was fantastic. It was great. And I was like, I thought it was good. I mean, I didn't think it was outstanding personally. I thought the acting was great.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I could see why he was so mad when he didn't get nominated, right? Mm-hmm.
And but... he made Hubie Halloween, or he's making some movie now. Because I remember he was like, if I don't get nominated for an Oscar, I'm going to intentionally make a shitty movie for everybody.
I know, which is funny because a lot of my friends are like, oh, that movie was so cute.
Oh, like, Hubie Halloween?
Funny. Yeah.
I heard it's like fun. Brayden said he liked it, so I might have to check it out because him and Emily, they said they had a lot of fun with it. So I might have to just watch it.
Yeah, I've actually heard, because I saw the trailer and I was like, I feel like this is one of those comedy movies that's going to be kind of corny, but
I don't think that's the movie he's talking about, though. I think Adam Sandler is like intentionally going to write, he said it's going to be the shittiest movie he's ever made if he doesn't get an Oscar.
Oh no.
Which makes me like, that means he knows like the level of his like comedy movies. So he's aware of like they're what they are.
Right.
But he's also a good actor, is the weird thing.
He is. And that's why, like, after I saw that movie, I thought he should have been nominated at least. Mm-hmm. But I know.
Well, compared to, I forgot who else was nominated that year. He was definitely, well, he was snubbed, Dafoe was snubbed, Pattinson was snubbed.
Yeah.
Well, the whole Lighthouse was snubbed.
That's true. I'm hoping maybe because Pattinson's been acting in more Oscar kind of films that he might start getting recognized more.
I don't know. I feel like the Oscars hate him for some reason. I feel like they can't get past like the Twilight, which he hates.
Yeah, I mean, it's, if you literally Google YouTube compilations of Robert Pattinson interviewing about Twilight, he's like cringing in all of them.
I think everybody in the cast does.
Yeah.
There's like some girl in the film. Who's the blonde vampire part of the family?
Oh, that plays Rosalie.
I didn't even know her name. I was like the blonde one.
I grew up in the Twilight era. I was in sixth grade and I loved those movies.
Well, I guess she had an interview and she forgot she was in them. And I think Anna Kendrick forgot she was in the Twilight movies too.
That was like the first time I ever saw Anna Kendrick.
She disappears in those movies, like not into the role. She just disappears. Like they just cut her out.
Like, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I remember I watched all five of them because they were for free on Amazon. So I was like, I'll sit down and watch them.
And?
It was how
long?
Did
you watch all of them?
I watched all of them. I watched all the extended cuts that are like 5 minutes longer.
Oh, I only appreciate the first one and the last one, but I thought 2, 3, and 4 were horrible.
I completely forgot there was five of them too.
Yeah.
So when I was like going through them, I was like, there's five? I thought there was four.
Yeah. I mean, I could talk about Twilight all day. I have a lot of feelings.
What is it? It's New Moon, then Eclipse.
Yeah.
I almost watched Eclipse after the first one because I didn't know which one was the second one.
I mean, I feel like you could technically watch them out of order.
Kind of. Like, nothing happens in those movies. They're like, nothing happens. It's a love triangle. Then you find out that Taylor Lautner is just interested in Bella's baby.
Which is weird.
Which is very weird. And then they're like, oh, there's these other vampires from the Vatican that are like the villains. Dakota Fanning's coming.
Okay, I like her character, Loki.
I like her. She was cool.
She was cool.
I liked her getting eaten in the vision because the battle didn't happen, which I thought was such bullshit.
I know.
I was waiting for that battle, and I was like, this is actually kind of cool. And then Rami Malek gets like his head ripped off, I think, or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. And then it doesn't happen, and it was bullshit. Yeah. And then they're just like, oh, we can't fight. Let's leave.
Yep.
Garbage. Garbage.
I mean, I have to give the movie credit though, because I didn't read the books, and my sister, I remember when we saw it in theater, she grabbed my hand when everyone was getting killed off, and she's like, this was not in the book.
Oh, it is not? Is it just
no,
like...
it's just that they don't fight. So the movie production like added that whole like, we're going to kill all these people off.
That was probably the smartest choice they could have done.
Yeah.
if they would have stuck to the book and been like, oh, we'll just show like we'll have her like be like, this is what happens. And you don't see it. And then that's the end of the movie. I'd have been like, fuck these movies. Like nothing happens in five movies. Breaking Dawn Part One is literally Kristen Stewart giving birth the whole movie.
Which was weird. It was weird.
She becomes like an old lady.
Yeah, it was weird.
Watch
that was
Twilight.
my least favorite. Oh, don't watch Twilight, guys. Save yourself.
I forgot which one was my least favorite. I didn't like any of them until the last one. I think I gave everything a half star, in my opinion, except the last one got one.
I don't think I've ever given a half star rating.
I've given a lot of half star ratings.
Really? I feel like I've given one, like I gave Cats a one star.
You gave that a one? That you're generous.
I feel like a one star is like, congratulations, you made a movie.
Nah. Here's the thing. I put a half star for like, cool, you made a movie, but I base it off of, does your movie have heart? Does it have a soul? What's the purpose of this film? Was it a cash grab? And Cats, I think, was just like, I was reading a lot about the director and how he was being a dick to everybody.
Really?
And how he was very, because people were saying, like, just put them in costumes. And he was very adamant about being like, no, this has to be like photorealistic CG with their faces on them. I also gave it a half star because that movie gave me a headache.
It was the first movie I watched where I couldn't follow the plot. Like,
there is no plot.
I didn't understand what was going on.
Let me see. Checking my Letterboxd diary right now.
I always love Letterboxd because you always end up watching the new films before me. So like right before Patrick and I go to see a new film, I always go on Letterboxd to see what you rate.
Did you see Borat 2 yet? Because that just okay.
Or Borat 2? Yes, yeah. Yes.
We can talk about that for a little bit since that's a new movie.
I loved it.
I thought it was good. I got some things to talk about. I'm not saying it's bad, but I got some things because I watched the first one or I rewatched the first one like a day before the new one came out.
Right.
I'm looking at my half stars though. I gave the reboot of Friday the 13th a half star. That one has a 25-minute intro with characters that all get killed in the first 25 minutes. Then the title card comes up and then new characters get introduced only to be killed throughout the whole movie. And it's very boring.
Wow.
Jason X I gave a half star, but it's like a generous half star because it was a goofy movie. I gave both the Kissing Booth movies half stars with Joey King. Where's the Twilight? There they are. I gave the first Twilight a half star, New Moon a half star, Eclipse a half star, Breaking Dawn Part 1 a half star, and then Breaking Dawn 2, one star. And my But my review of the film was, watch these films with a Snapchat filter. It makes it 100 times better.
That's hilarious.
That's all I was doing when I was watching those movies, was putting Snapchat filters over it.
Oh my gosh.
I give a lot of half stars out.
I don't know. If I feel like I see a bad movie, I give it like 1 to 2 stars, depending on... I don't know. Like, if I give a film a one star, it's like there's nothing good about this movie except the fact that you came together and made a movie. I feel like if I give a movie a two star, it's like, okay, this was a bad movie, but there's something about it I appreciate, whether it's like the cinematography or like maybe an actor or like something.
Well, yeah, there's criteria you got to do. I give half stars if there's like nothing redeemable about the movie, if I felt like I wasted my time, if I got a headache from it.
That's true. Maybe I'd give so far I've never not finished a movie. So maybe I would give a half star if I ever ended up walking out of the theater. I've yet to do that.
I think I stopped watching Human Centipede 2.
Oh God.
Because I got grossed out by it. I was like done with it.
The first one
I finished because I remember people were freaking out about it, how violent it was. I mean, it is, but I was like, it's not that bad. Once you like sit down and watch it, it's gross, but the second one's worse.
I mean, the most recent movie I had that was hard for me to watch was The Five Bloods, just because I'm very sensitive.
That one's good, though.
Yeah, but it was really hard for me to watch. Like,
it gets violent.
I mean, it was a lot more violent than I expected it to be. And I remember Patrick, it was long, too. We got to like hour two and he paused it and looked at me and he was like, do you want to finish this? And I was like, I feel like I do want to finish it because I like the concept, but like, I'm so disturbed.
It's good, but yeah, the violence is very, like, realistic in that film.
It's very realistic, very gory, and then, like, the part that really disturbed me was they would put, like, real pictures of the Vietnam War of, like, mm-hmm. dead, like blown up babies and, like, children and, like...
That's what Spike Lee does.
Oh gosh, it was like so like stomach curling.
I gotta respect Spike Lee for that though.
I mean, I do, and I like I always my ooh, my mic. My favorite films are films that are real, like are based off of nonfiction or like historic moments. And I like never knew about like African-American people in the Vietnam War, like basically being thrown in to like be killed off, you know? Yeah. And I had no idea. So like, I wanted to finish that movie because I thought it was so interesting and I loved the concept and the characters and the acting, but I know like, I'm just really bad when it comes to like violence. And I was like, Oh, God.
I think they did the same thing in the Civil War. I think I remember either reading the North or the South was like, basically being like taking their slave. Well, not the North, but the South was like taking their slaves and being like, oh, if you fight for us, like you'll be free.
And
they were essentially just going to fuck them over anyway.
Yeah. I started looking into it after I like saw that movie because I had no idea. Like, they don't teach you that stuff in school, right? I feel
they
like
don't.
They're just like, Black people were slaves. Now they're free. Martin Luther King Jr., normal today. Like,
racism doesn't exist. It's in your
we
textbook.
We abolished it.
That
we
was the
grew
thing.
From it.
I'm going to not go on too much of a political rant, but that's like the shit that's been pissing me off about people online who voted for Biden. They're like, oh, Biden's in, so racism's over, COVID's over, yada, yada, yada. And people are like, no, that's not what it means. But
no. And also, Trump's in office until January.
Well, he's on the golf course.
Right. But I'm just
But he's going to barricade himself in the Oval Office and he's not going to leave.
Oh, my God. Donald Trump's called my house or his campaign's called my house in Virginia like 6 times a day. And it's like, there is voter fraud in the United States and this is our country and we need to recount all the votes. You know,
garbage.
And I'm like, mom, don't answer that.
I don't know. It's not to get on like that much of a political rant, but it's so stupid. And like everyone that like is like, oh, you voted for Biden because you like him. It's like, no, I just wanted Trump out of office.
If it was opposite and Trump was a Democrat and acting like this, I would have voted for Biden if he was a Republican. I just want a normal president, like a freaking level-headed president.
Exactly. But fun fact, when I was watching the coverage, at one point, they put up everybody's name, like Biden, Trump, and then I forgot who is it, Jurgensen, the libertarian candidate.
Oh, yeah.
The third party that like no one voted for, who no one ever votes for. But at one point, they cut to like the numbers in one of the states and they put Trump as a Democrat and Biden as the Republican. Like they just flipped it. And I was like, holy shit, Trump switched.
Oh my God. That's funny.
And then they corrected it. But I don't know. That shit was nuts. That whole week was
nuts.
I don't know, but no more political talk. This is not a politics podcast.
I know, sorry.
This is not Ben Shapiro's dumbass show. I don't know. What?
Well, actually, linking politics back to the podcast, Borat.
Borat, yes. Let's talk about Borat. Borat subsequent movie film.
Very nice.
That movie, that was crazy because they just dropped the trailer for it like a couple weeks before it came out.
Yeah, it came out really fast because I know Patrick really loves Borat and Bruno.
I do too.
And I was always like about it. Like I thought it was funny, but I didn't really understand the character that well.
Go ahead. So Borat's essentially a character who it's playing off the idea of like a foreigner coming to America and trying to basically bring out the worst in people. Like he's playing up these stereotypes like, oh, it's a dumb foreigner. Let's be like smart Americans and show them how to do things. And like, kind of like not a condescending way, but he's just trying to prove points about like,
he's trying to expose people for who they really are.
Exactly. Like in the first movie, when he's like, I was watching Red Letter Media talk about it. And it was like a joke I completely missed when he's like, he goes to the bathroom and he brings back his bag of poop because he doesn't know what to do with it. They were talking about how like this lady felt the need that she had to go to explain to a grown man how to flush poop down the toilet. Like she had to be there and like physically showing him how to do it. It's like says stuff about what they think of foreigners. Like,
Right.
Because he's trying to prove, like, because most Americans, they see one foreigner, they think that's all foreigners. Like, all, at least not most Americans, like all the bad, like the, you know, the
non-welcoming.
The non-welcoming ones. Yeah. But then he's also trying to prove, I think it's basically him, yeah, just trying to expose people, bring out the worst of them.
Right. And that's why I just thought he was playing like a funny character until when this trailer came out, Patrick got really excited. So to prep me, he had me watch like all these interviews with Sacha Baron Cohen. And like, I grew so much respect for him because he was literally like, I literally came out with this movie a week before the election on purpose. So like people would understand like these are Trump's supporters and that this is what they really believe. And he like was, it was real. Cause I never understood that the people that he's interacting with are real people. Mm-hmm. And he convinces them that, you know, he's just doing a documentary on like him coming to America. And so it's like real people's reactions. And he, like with some of these people, he actually like quarantined with those countrymen for like 5 days and lived with them. Like it's crazy. Like the amount of dedication he put into this and it took like the whole year to make. And when I saw it, I thought it was effective. I thought I was stunned by a lot of the people's reactions and like how disgusting and racist some people were like outwardly being around him. And I don't know. I thought it was funny. It was effective. It literally mind blew me, like all of these people's racist comments.
I think the difference between like the second film or the new one versus the first one, I think he does a better job exposing people in the first one versus this one. This one, it like the Rudy Giuliani scene. Like I watched it and I was like, it looks like he's putting his hand down his pants, but it's also like you can manipulate that however you want, edit it.
Right.
Versus the first movie when he's talking to like the guy that runs the rodeo and talking about like, he's like, oh, we take gay people out and we hang them. Like, you don't go kissing other men. And like, Sasha's just getting him like to keep saying all this shit.
Yeah.
It's like, he's exposing more people in the first movie versus this one was like, this one was a better like movie narrative structure story. Like, because I like the relationship between him and his daughter in the film.
Right.
But there was never a moment in the film where I'm just like, oh, he really got somebody or like he really exposed someone. It was all like people I expected him to expose in a sense.
Right.
And then I don't know, because a lot of it too, I didn't know, like, because he does hire actors too to have people in on the joke.
Right.
And a lot of this movie, I'm like, I don't know if these people are in on it or if like they're not in on it. Like the guys he lived with, I thought they were actors because at one point they're following them a lot and showing them a lot on camera that I'm like, oh, these guys are just like really good actors committed to the character.
Right.
But then they are real guys.
Yeah. I mean, when at the end, when he's on stage and he's like, chop Obama up and put him in a stew and then inject him with the Wuhan flu and everyone's singing along. I was like, oh my God.
Like, did you see the footage of him that they discovered it was Sasha? And they all got mad at him.
Yes. And he had to hide in the trailer.
They were like, get my gun.
Yeah. People were like pissed. I like I respect him so much for like what, like that whole process of like what he's trying to do and the intent, because like I saw a lot of footage and I also appreciate that the actress he chose for the role, she is it Bulgarian or Hungarian?
I think she's Romanian, I thought.
Or Romanian? I'm going to look it up just so I can make sure I get it correct for her.
Because he did the same thing in Bruno, where his character was like playing up like what people think of gay people, like the stereotypes.
Yeah.
And I always remember the interview he did with Paula Abdul, where she's talking about how much good she does for like immigrants and like the less fortunate. But he's interviewing her on like gardeners, like immigrant gardeners, because he's like, I don't have furniture.
Because
also his daughter in the film isn't like a famous actress. They just discovered her.
Right, that's what I'm saying, which
she's from Bulgaria.
Bulgaria? Okay, yeah. So she's Bulgarian and she's done like a little bit of Bulgarian film. So I thought it was cool for the film he decided to do like an open call and let like everyone from all over audition. And he had like 500 submissions and he ended up picking her. And I thought it was cool. You didn't like pick someone who's like well-known already or like established. Well,
I feel like that could have given away the joke too. Like if it was like a famous person or someone people know in America.
Right.
Cause it's like Borat, even in the film, like people know who he is in America or like in Los Angeles, people know who he is.
Yeah.
But when you go to, when you go to like states like Missouri or something, people probably aren't as familiar with Borat. Mm-hmm. Or like have forgotten about him.
Right. I think, didn't they film a lot of it in Texas?
I think yeah. The guys he lived with were in Washington or Oregon, something like that.
Yeah, that movie was crazy. And I give him so much credit.
But yeah, I like the first one better than this one. They're both good, but like in the first one, it's more about getting people versus the story, where this one's more focused on the story versus the actual like gotcha moments.
Right.
But they're both still good. But I think it's also a testament to like Sasha's acting, because he's playing Borat while Borat's also playing characters to disguise the fact that he's Borat.
Yeah.
So he's like double acting.
Well, have you seen This Is America, his series? I mean, he's so many characters.
I think it's Who Is America.
Who Is America?
This is America's Childish Gambino.
I literally discovered this like a week ago, guys. I'm sorry. But like, I just started watching it and I've gotten like halfway through it and I'm like super impressed.
Who Is America is a better example of him getting people, because that show is rough to watch.
I mean, like, I get uncomfortable.
I had to stop watching it because I couldn't binge it, because I was like, oh my God, all these people are real.
Yeah. I mean, like he convinced like guys to capture illegal Mexicans by throwing a quinceañera and literally advertising a sign saying like young pussy.
Yep.
Because they think like, oh, the way to catch the Mexicans is by advertising little girls, because that's why they have quinceañeras. And I'm like, people actually think this, like that's disgusting.
That the representative from Georgia who was trying to stop like a Muslim terrorist by touching his butt to them because it'll make him gay.
Oh my gosh. Oh,
like the fact that he can convince these people to do this blows my mind.
I know. And it's like, and in the show like Who Is America, he plays such a wide variety of characters.
Well, because he did the same thing with he had another show called The Ali G Show, but because Ali G, Borat, and Bruno were so well known, he was like, I need to retire them. Like, I can't use them anymore because people know it's me.
Right.
The fact that he came up with all these new characters and people still didn't know it was him.
I know, it's crazy. But I have to admit, like, in Who Is America, the makeup they do on him is really good.
Well, because that thing I like with Who Is America is he's not... Like in Borat, he's obviously going more toward like Republican Trump supporters. Right. Who Is America, he's kind of going after both sides, because he like interviews Bernie. He doesn't just stay with like Republicans. He does like everybody.
Yeah.
I don't know if he really exposed Bernie or if Bernie was just confused the whole time.
Bernie just seemed very confused to me. He was just kind of like, what?
Yeah, that one. There was another one in Who Is America. Oh, it was the, have you seen the one where he's like building a mosque in Kingman, Arizona.
Oh yeah, in the little town, and like they're having the town meeting and people are like, no, no.
And they're all like, this is why you had us leave our guns at the door. I was like, what? My God.
Yeah. And yeah, there's like a couple violent guys in the audience and I was like, oh my gosh.
My favorite part was when he's like, option one, and it's like the mosque and it's like big. And he's like, or option two, and it's bigger, and then there's a camel in the photo, like he added one.
And then they're like, it's going to be the biggest mosque in the world.
Outside of the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's, when I think of mosque, I think of terrorism. It's like, what? That's what you think?
Yeah. Oh, God, well, that's small-minded people. They think all terrorists are Muslim. Black people are the problem to violence, not white people.
Mm-hmm.
It's illegal like, immigrants aren't American. They're going to make us speak Spanish.
They don't realize that Americans are... They don't realize Americans are immigrants?
Like, we're all immigrants, people! We just came here before them! It doesn't mean shit.
I want to get off this like political rant with like ending with this one tweet that made me laugh. This guy Trump was tweeting about like how he won the legal vote, and everyone's like, no, you still didn't win the legal vote. And some guy commented being like, or replied to him and was like, this is the worst election in my 54 years of being an American citizen. I'm going to move to England where they know how to run a country. And this king, I want to like chef kiss this tweet. This king tweeted at him and was like, America was formed because they left England because England didn't know how to run a country. I was like, yes, genius.
Perfecto.
Like these people, I don't know. It's like something, I don't know. Again, I think it goes back to like what they're taught in school. Like you said, like you didn't know anything about the Vietnam stuff and like the black soldiers. It's like they don't teach it. They teach a very one-sided side of history.
I know, like, I think all states teach different kinds of history. But I think most states have the basis of the same history classes. But I know in Virginia, like, it was literally, we didn't learn anything about the Native Americans except that we were friends with the Native Americans and, you know, they taught us how to grow corn and, you know, stuff like that. But, like, they didn't talk about how we, like, wiped them out or, like, what happened with them. Like, we
Chris Columbus discovered America and was Chris best friends. Columbus.
Yeah. So, like, I feel like I got gypped. I feel like my history was totally irrelevant to, like, what happened, actually, you know?
I want to know if you thought this. Was I the only one who thought Chris Columbus was a doofus? Because they taught us in school. I remember even in school, they taught us. They're like, Chris Columbus discovered America. He wasn't going to America, but he discovered it. I'm like, that sounds like an idiot.
Yeah.
He was like, they were like, he was trying to go to India, but he went the other way. I'm like, idiot. Even as a kid in school, I'm like, this guy's a doofus.
Yeah, I didn't get it, but
I don't know.
Whatever. Well, yeah. Side topic, I did want to mention, I looked at Variety's Oscar prediction list, and I love that most of the movies this year that are predicted to get the Oscar Best Movie of the Year nomination are mostly African-American historic films and films with a lot of Black actors.
What were some of the films? Is like Defy Bloods, I'm assuming, is on there.
The Five Bloods, also Trial of Chicago 7, Ma Rainey, which hasn't come out yet. I wish I had, most of them haven't come out yet. Like, I wish I had the list in front of me, but I watched the trailer to all 25 on the list, and all of them looked really good. And most of them were primarily Black actors, which is really cool because I feel like in the Oscars especially, like, Black actors have always been very underrepresented.
Agreed. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've talked about many years, or like for the last few years, I've always said how, like, I'm glad Moonlight won Best Picture and Best Script, but like all of those actors were snubbed.
Oh yeah. And like, I mean, you had Black Panther, like, I mean, yeah, great, awesome. But like, it was like, I always felt like with the Oscars, they're like, oh, here's like one movie with Black actors in it, and then the rest is all white actors. Like, I feel like it's never been like fair where you see like actors that aren't white. I mean, not just Black too, like, you know, also like Hispanic actors and Black actors. And
or even like, what was it? Parasite, like it got all like the big awards, but none of their acting was nominated.
Right, it's still like very white dominated, so I really appreciated that the prediction list was mostly Black actors, and I hope that a lot of the actors get nominated for Best and Supporting Actor.
Well, I do have an issue with the Oscars. I don't know if they're doing it this year or when it's going to go into place, but they're starting to make, like, if you want to have your movie nominated for Best Picture, you have to hit a certain checklist, essentially.
Really?
And it's like, I don't like that they're doing that, because then it's forcing you to put that in your movie versus like it just being natural, or them just picking movies that have it.
I didn't know about this.
They're like, basically like, your movie needs to have, I got to look it up because some of it was bullshit. And I remember even Alfonso Cuarón was like, it's stupid, because he's like, it's not going to be natural anymore. What is it? Best Picture. So to be eligible, so yeah, to be eligible for Best Picture, a film must meet at least two standards across four categories: on-screen representation, themes and narratives, creative leadership and project team, industry access and opportunities, and audience development. So it's like you have to have these, like at least two of those criteria if you want your film to be nominated versus them actually just nominating. Instead of not, they like nominate the same films. They don't like
Why
go, they don't branch out.
do you think they made that checklist? I feel
They
like they normally.
made it because people were getting mad that they were nominating too many white people and like all
Right.
this, and not like all the Best Picture films were like typical. Like they're like you could predict which ones they were gonna pick
Right.
versus like an important film similar to Moonlight. It was Portrait of a Lady on Fire. That was last year. Got completely snubbed for best foreign film or even best picture. What else? What else? What else? Well, like they nominated Green Book and Green Book won, and that's essentially a white savior movie. So it's like stuff like that, but it's like they're not looking outside of their tiny Hollywood scope. Like
That's true.
there's so many other films they could have picked.
Well, there's a lot of on the prediction list, it's a lot of indie films and a lot of streaming service films, which is interesting.
So here's it's going to go into effect in 2024.
Oh, so
So
we still got a bit.
for on-screen representation, to achieve standard A, the film must meet one of the following criterias. What is that? Lead or significant supporting actors. At least one of the lead actors or significant supporting actors is from an underrepresented racial or ethnic group, and then they list like all of them. General ensemble cast, at least 30% of all actors in secondary and more minor roles are from at least two of the following underrepresented groups. Main storyline slash subject matter, the main storyline theme or narrative of the film is centered on an underrepresented group. So it's also like a thing where it's like they're determining what's underrepresentative, which it is, but it's like they're like, oh, this is underrepresented. Like, why? It's because you're not picking it, Academy.
Right.
So it's like, I don't know, every decision the Academy makes kind of baffles me.
I mean, at least like we
They're
should be
trying.
seeing, you know, other like non-white actors getting you know, recognition.
Well, they also like, because that's the thing about the Oscars, they pick some weird choices. Like again, we could talk about like all the Oscar snubs, how a lot of people don't get nominated, but then they go and pick someone, I'm not gonna say like generic, but they go and pick someone like Christian Bale from Ford versus Ferrari. Like, yeah, good performance. Was it best actor or best supporting actor worthy?
No.
Compared to something else, probably not.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. The Oscars, they like every decision they do is like seems like they're trying to do better, but then it's like they didn't think it all the way through. It's like a surface level idea.
Yeah.
They need to represent horror. Like that's what they need to do.
That's true. Has there been any major horror films ever been up for Best Picture?
I think Get Out was nominated.
Oh yeah.
That's the last one I remember.
Yeah, the horror is not really, you don't really see popular movies or horror films.
Exactly. Like, yeah, say what you will about Black Panther. I kind of still disagree. It shouldn't have been Best Picture. Just because like I have technical issues with it, but I understand why it was nominated. But again, like it's also one of those things where it's like you have a movie in the best picture category, but you're not going to nominate the director. Like Ryan Coogler didn't get nominated. So it's like, how do you nominate the movie? It's like, oh, this is like the best picture of the year. Oh, but the director, nah, he's not nominated or she's not nominated.
Yeah, keyword she, which there needs to
Another
be
thing.
more female director nominations.
Again, Portrait of Lady on Fire. You could have nominated Celine. Could have nominated. I think Greta was Greta nominated for Little Women for director or...
I think she was.
Okay, that's good.
I think.
But
But
there's
she normally gets a nomination, but
other like female directors out there that like don't get nominated.
I know that. I mean, Greta Gerwig's the only one that comes to mind that I commonly see at the Oscars, which I mean, I should be able to name like a bunch of female directors at this point.
Ava DuVernay, I don't think, has been nominated.
I mean, I saw a statistic the other day that in the film industry, there's only like 20% of directors are female, or it's like very low. Like there's an, and I know like a lot of women that want to be directors. I just think there's still a lot of like sexism in the industry.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see. Best directing 2020 was, oh no, she didn't get, it's all men. It was all men.
There, I think that's what I heard. Like everyone was like, she should have been nominated over.
Yep.
Who was the list? There was somebody they were like, take this person out and put.
Quentin Tarantino for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Todd Phillips for Joker,
That's who it was.
Bong Joon-ho, Parasite, Martin Scorsese, The Irishman, and
Did you say Scorsese?
Scorsese?
Scorsese.
Scorsese. I'm sorry,
You're disrespecting the game.
guys. Love you all. And Sam Mendes in 1917.
Think people were saying take Sam Mendes or Todd Phillips out and put Greta in. I remember I said take one of them out because I was like Joker is good, but not. I like Little Women better.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. But I think in my opinion, what made Joker really good was
It's Joaquin.
yeah.
That's
Yep.
it. That's it.
That's
Well,
basically it.
the music was good and then the cinematography was good, but that's about it. And the production
Yeah.
design was good.
Right. But like what makes that movie special was the acting.
Yeah, but it's like again, that's a movie where I could get bashed on too for people being like, "Well, Little Women's another remake," but it's like I think she did something different with it. Her
Yeah.
directing elevated it.
That was one movie I didn't get to see last year that I wanted to.
It's good. I think it's on Amazon.
Maybe I'll put that on my list to watch this week.
Good times on Amazon. Watch that.
I'll put that on my list too. That's the nice thing about the pandemic and being forced to stay inside is I feel like I've been watching a lot more film because I know I'm a film actor, but like I have severe ADHD. So growing up, I never watched film, like ever. Because I couldn't sit through the whole film. So I didn't really start watching film until like I was like over 18. So I feel like I have a lot of catching up to do. So
I've been watching like TV shows. I don't know, I've been trying to watch films, but nothing. There's like I haven't been able to like properly maybe sit myself down and watch a movie. It's either I'm watching TV shows or I'm playing video games or trying to write. 'Cause I've been trying to write a lot more now 'cause I want to get things made. I'm trying to see what else is on Amazon Prime for you to check out.
I have to admit, I miss being in Michigan with Patrick just because he had that nice movie theater room and that made me want to watch movies every day.
I need to like invest in a nice home theater. Like I have a sound bar and subwoofer, but and a nice TV, but I want like a movie theater room.
Yeah, like the projector on like the whole wall. It's really cool.
But I currently invested in a home gym first. Especially if we're gonna go into another lockdown with cases. It's like now I'm set. I don't need to go to a gym.
Yeah, right. That's been my struggle is like, ugh, I gotta work out at home, but I like the strength train, but I only have like 10-pound, hand weights, and that's it. And I'm like, I miss going to the gym and using like a leg press and
Well, Claudia and I got lucky because that's what we were doing in LA. But then we got out here, and like anytime we see dumbbells at like Target or something, we'll grab them if we don't have it. But we went to Dick's and we found the dumbbell rack so we could put them all away. But then we also found a squat rack and a two or no, a 300-pound barbell set.
oh, nice.
And it was the barbell plus 300 pounds of plates for like 250.
That's not bad.
And
I
if you
thought it would be
know
more than that.
the plate, it would be the 45 plates alone, I think, are $100 or
Right.
$120 for two. So we got all that, and it's been nice.
Yeah. Are you guys gonna, when you guys decide to come back to LA, are you gonna bring it all back with you?
We don't know what we're gonna do with that. We don't know. The move out here was a nightmare.
Wait, I never even asked you about that.
The move.
Yeah, how was yours?
So the move itself was like pretty smooth, like getting everything out of the apartment and like locking everything up and making sure the apartment was clean. Like we got, I think they took off my last month would have been this month's rent, and they took it off because it was only going to be a prorated fee. But we got out here. We took 4 days and drove from LA to Indy, then did our quarantine. But the movers got here. That was a nightmare dealing with that because most of the boxes were damaged. We like opened everything to make sure things weren't like broken.
Oh no.
There were things dinged that we like put in a claim and got money for, but we opened our TV and like set it up and it had a bunch of lines on it. And we're like, what the fuck is this? Like it's broken. Like they like it looked like it literally like got either slammed into or like it fell.
Right. Like they didn't secure everything in the truck properly.
But there was no damages on the screen. It was all like internal damage.
Right.
So we filed like the report about it. We're like, this is our TV. And then like we turned it on later and nothing was even coming up. And like at the top of the screen, it looked like a crack, but it's not a crack in the TV, but like it looked like literally like a crack. We filed it. The money they gave us, we like bought a new TV. We were able to get one. But they came back to us and they're like, oh, we don't cover electronics, like damages. And I'm like, that's bullshit.
That's like the most expensive thing.
So exactly. And it's completely useless now. So we filed a dispute, I believe. Or we like wrote them a whole like claim again, being like, what are you doing? Like, this is because if you go to this company's website, on their website, for the example, because we had insurance on everything. If you go to this company's website, their example for like the insurance claim, they're like, for example, if this happens, then we cover all of it. Their example is if you have a TV and it gets broken and it's a $1,600 TV, we will cover the whole $1,600. That is on their website as the example. And they came back to us and been like, we don't cover electronics. And I'm like, that's fraud then. Like, I'm going to file a lot of more stuff.
Right.
Like, that's just fraud. It's bullshit.
Well, I'm sorry you went through that. That is really hectic.
Yeah, it was. That was like 2 months or a month and a half worth of ordeal.
Yeah, that's rough.
But we are not, if we move back to LA, we are not working with that company.
Yeah, definitely not.
And it also took, we kept emailing and calling the person that was like our claims adjuster or our the person that was handling our move payments to get our receipt. They would not send us our receipt for the move. And then when they sent, or the invoice, that's what it was. And then when they finally sent us the invoice, it didn't have like details. It just said the price. Which is bullshit.
Yeah.
It's shady and sketchy.
That's shady. Yeah. Movers are tricky. I mean, that's why I've never used movers yet. I've just been having the minimalist lifestyle. But I know like as I'm getting older, like Patrick and I are accumulating more and more stuff as mm-hmm. we're getting older. So like, I know eventually we're gonna have to start hiring movers, but I just like am so nervous because my parents have all had bad experiences with my mom getting jewelry stolen or like, you know, things being broken. And I feel like every time someone does movers, it's like a horror story.
Well, it's like, it's also like we had to because it was a cross country.
Yeah, I know. So it's, you guys didn't really have a choice.
Yeah. So it's like, I don't know what we're going to do if we move back to LA. So we'll have to figure it out.
Yeah.
I'll have to be making movies and making a lot of money.
Yeah.
But I don't know. What if, I kind of want to keep talking about my script. I don't know. We're so far. So.
I got time. I still got an hour.
I wanted to know what your thoughts were on it, because I know I wrote it for you and Haley, but I wanted mm-hmm. to know, like, as you were reading it, the vibe you were getting, if you could, like, because when I write, I vision it, and I wanted to know if you had a clear vision of how it's gonna, like, potentially look, or like how you felt about the overall, like, the characters.
Right. Well, I'm trying to be vague as well. I guess as an actor reading the script.
Well, let's give, so we're not vague, so that people understand what's happening. The basic plot of the script is these two, they are stepsisters. They're okay. Two stepsisters are driving. They're in the middle of the wilderness. Their car, for mysterious reasons, swerves off. It's not supernatural, but I'm not going to give it away. Swerves off, they get a flat tire, they need to look for help. There was a town a few miles back that they're going to get help for their car. That's the premise of the film.
Okay.
And then it
Thank
gets
you, Tim.
then it just gets apeshit.
I didn't know how much I was allowed to tell people. So,
and there's a cult involved, so that's about it.
Yes, but basically, I like with Haley and I's characters, they're very contrasting, where I feel like the character that you wrote for me is a lot harsher, a little more defensive, a little more detached, while Haley's more of like the naively positive one.
She's more like, not naive, I'd say more optimistic.
Optimistic.
She has a more like a, she views the world more hopeful. Like,
right. But she takes, I feel like, a lot of my, I'm not going to say meanness, but I can be kind of like very rude. And I feel like she kind of absorbs that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I just continually keep pushing and pushing her away until it does come to that breaking point where she, you know, I don't want to give too much away. We come to the climax of the story. And I feel like my character starts becoming protective and starts empathizing more with her, and kind of also I feel like is scared for her, and like is also feeling more, like finally like that sisterly connection towards the end to her, until you know what happens at the end. But I saw, like, it's funny, like when you first started writing the script, and you just kind of showed me that, like, oh, so your character's gonna be kind of the bossier one, and then, you know, like, but, and you and Haley are going to have this conflict. I didn't know where, like, the character development for my character would go in that amount of time. But I do see, like, a character arc where I feel like I become more her sister towards the end. And I kind of take her for granted.
Mm-hmm.
And I start realizing, like, oh, crap, maybe I wasn't that good to her.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like I was writing it and you're not necessarily, like, like you are mean to her,
right.
But it's one of those things where it's like she did nothing to you. You're just
exactly.
It's like she's a scapegoat for issues, not between you two, but just your issues.
Right. And I just keep like projecting that on her and she just keeps like bouncing it off or like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But like I said, but like I like that because it's like I'm dealing with my own stuff and I don't really understand or like are. That she is my sister and I have that connection to her until the end when I feel like I'm going to lose her.
Mm-hmm.
And then I start like really reflecting on everything and like being like, oh crap, like I took this for granted.
I'm trying to also in the script, I was trying to make it kind of come across like playing with the element of time and how like in the script itself, you could interpret it as it takes place in a night, but I was trying to write it as if like, you guys are in the woods for longer than a night. Like you guys, like the sense of time is essentially lost after a while.
I was wondering that. Cause when I read it, I was like, I think all this takes place within like 24 hours, but
that's like,
I got that feeling through it that it's kind of like, even though we entered this town and it's still like the same day, like I feel like the way it's written, it feels like it's been like we've been here forever.
That's like what I like is like the movies I like are films that are like Richard Linklater stuff. They all take place within a day. Like everything that happens in the film is in a 24-hour period. And I like stories like that. But I wanted to play with the element of time. And when you're lost in like the woods and there, I've read a lot about people going through portals and going into other time, like time lapses and like losing that sense of time. It was kind of wanting to play with that, but also making it seem like it's still one night.
Yeah, I totally got that when I read it.
Cool. Noted. I was also like, when I was writing it, I had the score for The Witch playing to have that very like isolated eeriness.
Mm-hmm.
But I was also incorporating Halloween's music. And there's some like slasher elements to the film, not in the sense of like there's a killer on the loose, but like there's like the scene of you looking for Haley because she like went off ahead and like you think someone's watching you.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's like a figure that like comes out and it's very like Michael Myers inspired because it's also like I was writing the script with the idea of. Or not the idea, but like the feel of like The Hills Have Eyes, where the original movie is like very dated and campy, but I love the beginning where the whole family driving through the desert is filmed from far away as if people are watching.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of times in the script where I was writing it as if like you guys are off on your own, but the audience is with the people watching you guys.
Yeah. And like, I mean, and throughout the whole script, I felt like I was trying to just say earlier that it has this eeriness, but it kind of has like this anxiety too, like throughout the whole script, like this underlying anxiety that never really goes away and just continues to heighten.
I can't wait to like film it and then like editing it. Like that sound design that I had in my head for a lot of the scenes is going to be so good.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
But I'm still like trying to figure out how to do that ending because I know what the ending interpretive is, and like I had like a clear image of how I want to do it. I'm just trying to make the ending not seem like hokey or like very out of left field. I gotta figure out how to do that. And I need to know what Haley thinks of the script. I don't know if she's ready.
She'll get to it. I'll be excited to see what she has to say too.
But I'm excited about it. And then I got a couple other scripts I need to work on because we never worked on anything at Columbia.
I know, like you're the first person I ever met at Columbia, and we never ended up working together.
Well, because like we were gonna work on something that I was writing that ended up falling apart, and then I don't know. I was working on a bunch of other things, or like I don't know what happened with like the directing projects I got. Like they wouldn't let me pick my people I wanted, and then my last project in directing too was kind of rushed, so I just picked like Cole, my roommate, and then his friend, or like his other acting friend. I was just like, "You all right? I'll have you guys in it," and then.
Right. And you were a year under me, right? So I felt like in the theater program, whenever I got paired with the film classes, I was with the film kids that were like the 1 year ahead of you guys.
I think so, yeah. Because like I like the actors I got paired with for my projects, but it was always like I would want to work with them again too, but it was like I wanted to pick like Haley or like the other actors I knew.
Yeah.
Like because like Haley and I never worked on anything after the Midwest Fiasco.
Oh yeah, I
And
remember that.
we've been trying to work together on projects after that. I think that's still my favorite one I did at college.
I liked that one.
That one was all done in 2 weeks. Like the idea came from it. We rehearsed it, shot it, and then edited it all within a week
Wow.
or within like a week and a half.
Man, does that feel like just yesterday? That was a really long time ago.
It was a long time. That was 2015, 5 years ago.
Yeah, isn't that
Well,
crazy?
it's like that one, and then the one I did with Cole, the horror one. That's the
Yeah.
thing. That's the thing we were talking about. It's like I wish they would have let us do more of what we wanted to do. Because I never saw anybody do horror projects at Columbia.
Right. And you would think they, especially for the film, I mean, for acting too. Well, like I said, there wasn't a lot of film acting, but I mean, when I went to college, I kind of wanted a reel by the time I graduated, like a reel that I was proud of. And I felt like I had like a half a reel, but not a reel that I really loved. And then also for like film, like as a director, you probably want a reel when you graduate. And it's like all the projects you were forced to create rather than like you're like you could have had a reel of like projects that you wanted to put out into the universe and like really stand by you as a director and like, you know, express what you want to do after college.
Like the reel I have is like good for what it is. I wish it was more. That's the other thing too about Columbia is like if you wanted to have like good footage, you have to do directing 3 or practicum. But if you do practicum, the footage isn't yours. You don't have any rights to it once you leave, which sucks.
Yeah, I watched Patrick go through practicum because he's a DP and his film was really good, but it does kind of suck that you don't really own the rights to it.
That's why I think a lot of people were like, I want to do D3 because then you get the rights to your film versus Columbia owning your film. I don't know. That's a whole mixed bag, I guess. I thought they were shutting down practicum too because I've heard so many nightmare stories from practicum sets.
Yeah, Patrick only did practicum and he actually enjoyed it just because he was really close to his professor that did practicum. Like, he was a mentor to him. So he kind of lucked out that he got to work with his mentor through it. But I know that the program itself, there was a lot of flaws in it.
Yeah, I remember in the last couple of years I was there, there was a lot of stories coming out.
Yeah.
And it was, I thought the D2 sets I was seeing were bad.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't that bad. They were like tedious things.
Right. Like, I mean, there was a handful of films. I remember since I went to go see Patrick's practicum film screened, I saw like all the practicums of that year. And then there was like a Q&A with mm-hmm. the students afterwards. And there was a couple of films that were just like not done well. And the Q&A was so awkward because you could tell people were like either tense or like, you know, angry. And it was just kind of uncomfortable because I felt like that year, like there was only Patrick's film and like one other film where they were like, we're really proud of what we did. Everyone else mm-hmm. was just like angry or like uncomfortable.
That's like a bummer too. Is like when you have like a project, like it's such a bummer when you hear about films that like people are passionate about making, but then the set and like filming it was such a nightmare that you don't want to like deal with it.
Well, yeah, especially like I know in college, like everything kind of builds up to your senior performance or your piece. You know, you finally get to make something of quality that's like professional. And if it doesn't work out, you're like, well, great. What am I going to graduate with?
I remember I got upset, not at my, on my set, but when I was filming at the MPC for directing too, it was me and another guy directing at the same time, which I always, like, I understood why they did it, but I hated it because it was always like, you got to wait for the other side and then mm-hmm. yada, yada, yada. But so they gave us an 8-hour window to film, right? So we're filming like on my side and then we go to lunch and then we're like, we come back and we're getting ready and like, I'm like talking to my actors, talking to my like my professor, like we're looking at the shots. And about 5 hours in, like this is the fifth hour, the other side wraps. So they still had 3 hours to shoot, but he like the director was like, no, I'm good. I got everything I need. And wow. We're like, you had 3 hours, like you could do anything and you're just mm-hmm. calling it.
Yeah.
So then what annoyed me was they were tearing down their set when I'm still trying to get my stuff filmed. And then I guess he went and like talked about how he was such a good director later. I've heard a story about after how he left. It was like, he was like, I killed it. Like we wrapped 3 hours early.
That means nothing. That usually like
most people will say like you wrapped 3 hours early. Like you had such time, like so much time to do anything else okay. and like try things.
Every single professional set I've been on, it always goes over. I think there was only like twice I was on Chicago Med and they wrapped like on time. Like every single piece of art that I've ever been in has gone on for like 14 hours when it was supposed to be like a 12-hour day. Like mm-hmm. if you are wrapping 3 hours early, that means you did not get enough coverage. You need to go back and figure out what you're lacking in coverage. Try to tell the actors to try different methods, like let them have creative freedom, like go over like B-roll you're missing. I mean, there's so much you can do.
He like had barely any B-roll. The coverage he got was not that good. He had two actors who could speak Spanish and only had them speak Spanish because they could. It like didn't add to the story, and he was a white guy directing it. And it was his scene was very creepy, the way he directed the guy. I forgot what scene it was from, but he's like recording the girl and they're talking about like sexual experiences, but it's very weird how he did it. Like he directed it. It was like a man interviewing a woman about it with like a camera. It was very.
Wait, I remember this because I think I knew the actor in it. I remember this.
We'll have to talk about it off.
I watched this film. I know what this film is. I've seen it.
We'll have to talk about it off.
Yeah.
The show because
we'll talk about it later. But I saw it. I saw it.
Wasn't it bad?
It was awkward. But just as a female who went through Columbia, I auditioned for so many pieces that I decided not to do. I know in that situation, you really don't have a lot mm-hmm. to say. But I know just like auditioning off class, there was a lot of pieces that like were like just be nude for no reason or yep. like were very overly sexual. And one of my professors who's like a hardcore feminist, she like had a whole day lecture to our class saying, like, I'm so tired of seeing scripts that have nudity or that are oversexual for no reason. Like, mm-hmm. in art school, you can be nude, but you better give me a damn reason why this character is nude.
Well, that's like the whole point. Like, if you have something in your script, it has to have a point, versus like the Friday the 13th movies, you can watch them. There's a bunch of nudity in it. There's no point mm-hmm. to them. That's the point. But like, you're not going to see like a Friday the 13th movie for like a philosophical reason. You're going right. to see Jason cut somebody in half while they're having sex. Like, that's the whole point of the movie.
Eeky.
That happens in one of them.
Oh God.
That's what is it? Is it? Oh, I think it's, which one is it? I think it's Jason X. I don't know. I don't remember which one.
Oh gosh.
Or Jason Nine.
I'll probably never watch those movies.
They're goofy. I like Jason, or I like Friday the 13th 6, part 6. That one's goofy.
How many are there?
So here's the thing. There are 10. There's 10? There's 10 in the original series. Then they did Freddy versus Jason. And then they did a reboot in 2009.
And I feel like they're just dragging it out at this point, it sounds like.
And Jason's not in the first, or Jason's not the killer in the first one. He comes in at the end. Then he's in 2 through 4, but there's theories that every one of those films is a different person because it all happens within like 3 days, that it can't be Jason killing everybody. Then in part 5, Jason's dead and it's a copycat. Then in part 6, Jason comes back to life. Part 7 is like him versus like someone who has telekinesis. So it's like Friday the 13th meets Carrie. Part 8, he goes to New York. Part 9, he dies, but he has like, it's revealed Jason's this like squid demon thing that goes from body to body. So that movie, Jason's not in it. He's just going from body to body, killing people. And it's very weird and gross and not good. And then part 10, he's cryogenically frozen by the FBI and then woken up in the year 2455, I think, something, some stupid shit like that, and he's in space. And then Freddy versus Jason is them just fighting each other, and then the reboot where he just shows up and gets his mask and kills people.
Oh, yeah.
I've watched all of these, Kelly.
I'm sorry.
I have dedicated time to that franchise.
I'm sorry. Speaking of franchises, you'll be proud of me. I've only ever seen Star Wars 7, 8, 9.
Mm-hmm.
Because my parents were such Trekkies and didn't want to watch them growing up. But my dad last night said that he still thinks I need to see them because they're classics. So we're going to start watching the first 6.
Good.
I knew you'd be happy.
What order are you going to watch it? Well, you know the twist, right?
Right. And okay, my father explained he thinks I should watch it 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3.
I mean, that's fair.
He said technically it makes sense to watch it 1 to 6, but he says he thinks the 4, 5, 6 is way better than 1, 2, 3. So he said he doesn't want me to get bored. So he said he'd rather me watch 4, 5, 6, get into it, and then go to the backstory.
Well, yeah, because 4, 5, 6 is the original trilogy. Mm-hmm. And then it goes into the backstory of Darth Vader, which is 1, 2, 3.
Right.
But it's a lot of political talk and a lot of boring. And
right.
There are some good moments in it, but it's.
I guess he said there's a really good battle at one point.
There's a couple.
Towards the end. Yeah.
There's a couple. But then, yeah, like once you, like I've watched them all in order because I know everything that happens. Mm-hmm. So it's like I can now sit down and watch all of them in order. But yeah, they're good. I'm watching Clone Wars, which is the animated show that takes place between 2 and 3.
Oh,
and then,
interesting.
And then bleeds,
I didn't know about this.
And then bleeds into 3. It's pretty good so far. It like starts off childish, but then it gets more mature as each season goes.
Cool. Yeah.
And then The Mandalorian is on Disney Plus,
which I started. I'm on like episode 4, and I actually like The Mandalorian a lot.
That takes place after episode 6.
Oh my gosh, this timeline is so confusing.
Not really. It's pretty, it's just like, all right, this takes place here, this takes place here.
Okay, but as like a newcomer to the franchise who started with 7, 8, 9 and the Han Solo spinoff. Like
7, 8, 9 takes place 30 years after the original trilogy. Han Solo takes place before Episode 4.
See, I'm
Rogue One is before Episode 4. It's literally like right before Episode 4.
But Tim, this is why I have you and my dad and Patrick, because you guys can keep me on track. And I'm just like, okay, which one do I watch next?
Well, you got to watch the originals to know what happens.
Exactly. That's why I'm starting. I'm going to watch 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, and then I'll rewatch 7, 8, 9. And then I'm going to finish Mandalorian.
Good. That's how to do it.
Okay, good.
Then you'll know everything about Star Wars. Then you got to watch all the TV shows.
I didn't even know there was other TV shows.
There's like Clone Wars. There's Rebels. Oh, that's what I'm watching right now. There's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of books, too.
I'm not stunned. People are obsessed with Star Wars.
Yep. They have the worst fan base, though. Or it's like the most toxic fan base.
I went to Disneyland. I was pretty shook that they had a big Star Wars section. And they Galaxy's had like Edge. A... They had like a build your own lightsaber section. And these lightsabers were like hundreds yep. of dollars. And there was a line going out the door and my friend wanted one. And I was like, you want to pay like $200 for a custom lightsaber? And he's like, yeah. And this little kid in front of us, he's like, daddy, I want two. And his dad's like, oh, sure, son. I'm like, you're paying for like $400 worth of lightsabers for your 5-year-old child. And then by the time we got up, they were sold out of the color he wanted. And I was like, oh my God, Disney is making bank off of like little kids getting their parents to pay hundreds of dollars to build a lightsaber.
And they're going to make bank off of when Marvel Land opens.
Oh, wait, where is that in California or Florida?
I think it's going to be in both. I know they're building, you know, in Disneyland where the Guardians ride is.
Yes.
That section's now going to become like the Marvel section.
I mean, it makes sense. They have like a Pixar section. Cars, at California yeah. Adventure.
Yeah, Pixar yeah. Pier.
Yeah, so I mean, Marvel, that just makes sense.
I miss Disneyland.
I went for the first time the week of the pandemic, like literally went Tuesday. Everything shut down on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And it was my first time ever.
It's fun. It's fun when you go and it's not crowded, though.
I hate roller coasters. I thought it was going to be like every other theme park. I was like, I'm not going to enjoy this. I fell in love to the point I was looking up California passes because I wanted to go a lot.
Do you do Incredicoaster?
No. No.
You have to do Incredicoaster. Tim,
okay. I don't like scary movies. I don't like haunted houses. I don't like roller coasters. Why? Because I don't like the feeling of adrenaline. I don't like that feeling. So the only thing I ever went on was Ferris wheels. My friend Steven pushed me out of my box and I went on like Pirates. I went on the Indiana Jones ride.
If you can do Indiana Jones, you can do Incredicoaster.
No, because that's different. That's just like shaking side to side. I can't do like off the ground because I'm afraid of heights.
You can do Incredicoaster.
No way. You go upside. I watched them.
You go upside down twice.
Yeah. David and him, like I was watching literally like a big loop de loop and I was like, ugh! Nope. Never.
It's so much fun.
Tim, if me, you, and Claudia and Patrick ever go, I'll be waiting at the exit holding y'all's beer or whatever and, you know, cheering you down from the ground, you know?
Well, we'll go when the pandemic is safely away.
Yeah, like 2023.
2023. whenever the people will decide to let the pandemic die.
Even if we make it that far, TBH.
Honestly. But I think that's about to wrap it up. No one submitted questions to my Instagram poll.
Oh, guys, be more active.
No one submitted.
Following Lighting Up the Marquee podcast Instagram.
I knew there was a reason I killed that segment.
I mean, Tim is responsive and he'll answer any question.
I feel like they don't ask him because I don't post him on Instagram. But I put it in the question that I'm recording the episode, so I'll answer him there.
Right. Well, we'll see. You guys DM him, send him a question, let him know. If you have any recommendations for the show or for him to talk about,
do it.
Slip into his DMs.
Just do it. I was like, I'll bring the question back for this episode. And then no one submitted him. And I'm like, I knew there was a reason I killed that segment.
Questions are hard because a lot of people are watchers, but they're not they don't like to engage as much, you know?
Or I'll notice they'll ask the question, but I don't know if they listen to the episode.
Right.
So, yeah, they could be like, we did ask it, you didn't answer it. Like, and I'm like, I did.
Right.
But I think that's going to wrap up today. This is my longest one in a while.
Tim, when we get together, man, I feel like we can talk for hours.
I mean, we have. It's almost at the 2-hour mark.
I know.
It's like, it is my longest episode in a while. I got to check.
We could just make a movie from us talking over Zoom.
Exactly. Let's check. I feel like the longest episode I had. No, why did it log me out? I got to log into my server. The longest episode I had recently was with Nick back in September. Actually, just kidding. No, it was with you back in June. We got over 2 hours.
I mean, when you get us talking.
That's true. But I mean, other than that, I've been averaging out like hour 15, hour and a half.
Yeah, I feel like that's usually average for a podcast, like 45 minutes to an hour and a half.
But this one will be a long one, so people are going to have plenty to listen to.
Right? I mean, entertainment during a pandemic.
Exactly. Or like, some people are working, so throw in the podcast while they're driving.
Yeah, definitely.
But thanks, Kelly, for joining.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Tim.
I have the rest of this season. So also, I don't know if I told you this, I changed up the format of the show. So everything I did this year was season 2 of Lighting Up the Marquee. And everything I did last year was season 1. So I already have the next 3 guest slots filled up for this year, like finishing out season 2. But then we'll get you back in for season 3.
Yes. And all, by the way, Tim, I still think you should post to YouTube your podcast. I think you would get a bigger audience.
I'm trying. I'll work on it. I will work on it. Now that I got Zoom, I can pull video clips at least and put them on Instagram.
Yeah, definitely.
But do you want to let everybody know what you got going on, where to find you?
Hi, guys. Pandemic's happening, you know, so not working on a lot. Booked a couple remote gigs, but that's about it. But you can always keep up with me at Kelly LeMay, KellyLeMay. If you want to stay with me on my journey and, of course, follow the one and only Tim Martin over there.
Hi. Yeah, we're gonna post everything. We're gonna be trying to work on filming some stuff now that we're doing some scripts.
Watch out for the film he's creating.
Trying to create. I need to get a budget and people to work on it. We gotta do it though. I'm like really like wanting to get back to directing. Like as soon as I finish that script, I'm like, I wanna go direct it. Like, let's go.
Let's do it.
Let's go. But until then, you can keep listening to this show. You can find it on Facebook and Instagram at Lighting Up the Marquee. I'm actually trying to work on merch right now. I'm working on some, trying to get people to design. I got my friend who's helping me come up with some designs to try to get some merch out and make it for the show.
That would be awesome.
So I don't know when that'll be, but I'm wanting to get some merch for the show. But then also you can listen to us anywhere you listen to podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and Stitcher. I don't know. You don't listen to Movie Chatter, right? They're they're the podcast that's been promoting me recently. I'm gonna throw a little jab back at them because on their most recent episode, they were wanting to do questions too, or like have like someone like me send them a question, they'll answer it. But then they were like, the one of their hosts, Dave, threw a jab at me and was like, Tim, I want to know why you think you're so smart. And it's a playful jab. He's not like talking shit.
Right.
I know beefs. I listen to 90s hip hop. I know when there's beef. it's not beef. But to answer your question, Dave, I'm smart because I have a piece of paper from college that told me I am, and it told me I can make movies. That paper means nothing though. I don't even think I have it hanging, my degree from Columbia.
Really?
Do you have your degree hanging?
Yeah, at my parents' house.
Oh, mine's just in my old room, just collecting dust.
I, it's still an accomplishment. Like, you know, it's hard to mentally stay in college. So the fact we got through it, I think, is a big deal.
I think for me, I was just like, eh, I'm already 2.5 years in. Like, might as well finish. But yeah. I got out to LA through it, so that was good.
Exactly.
But that answers your question, Dave. But until next time, I'm your host, Tim Martin, and this has been Lighting Up the Marquee. We'll be right back.